Hey, welcome to the Cube Pod, episode 55. I'm John Furrier with Dave Vellante, extracting the signal from the noise. We're doing the podcast from Las Vegas, where we're doing the Cube for the second week in a row. It's a hot event season. It's kicking off. Dave, you know, we got 18 interviews under the belt. We're live here in Vegas, and it's awesome, right? And so we got a lot of news to cover. Here, obviously, SaaS is an old company, been around for 47 years, and they got a fucking opportunity, big time.
Well, I mean, this company's, there's a 3.1, $3.2 billion company that has been founded in 1976, right?
And that's in Little League.
Yeah, well, there you go. I was not even driving, right? And they've extended their platform way beyond, you know, what everybody knows used to know SaaS about. And so they are in a good position. I think they're going to be probably one of they've got to be one of the largest private companies in tech, yeah. Right at $3 billion. They're this founder-led company.
They're going to go public. They're trying to go public.
Yeah, they're going to go public. They've been sort of threatening to do that now for like 3 or 4 years. You know, Dr. Jim Goodnight came by. Did a little photo op with us, but he's like hardcore, like geek. I mean, he's coder.
He's still coding at his age.
He codes every day.
Well, SaaS, right? That's what he does. They're in the middle of the AI wave. We're seeing massive news coming in. The new AI models there. They're doing some stuff here. We'll come back to SaaS and cover this. We covered like a blanket. We're here. We got tons of Cube interviews. If you're interested in SaaS, check it out. We have the CHIPS Act, big bucks giveaway. More money going out.
Samsung
got a big chunk. Micron reportedly next. A lot of content, and then you know the big news is that you know Anthropic this week put out a new language model, Opus, that's got great performance. And today, Meta details Llama 3, 8 billion and 7 billion parameter models, reducing false refusals. Upcoming models are trained on 15 trillion plus tokens that has 400 billion parameters. So the arms race, as we talked about last time, is happening. We're seeing a massive model coming out. And again, I just picked this up.
So 8 billion parameter model that was trained on, like, what do you say, a gazillion parameters?
400 billion.
So that's going to run on your iPhone.
Okay. The first two LLMs in the lineup that they featured, 8 billion and 70 billion parameters.
Those are running.
Okay.
Oh, 8 billion are run on your iPhone.
They're going to expand them.
70 billion.
They're going to expand with additional models that feature more than
maybe
400 billion parameters. Okay. So this is what it means. Our conversation about Meta being in the game is true. These guys are going to be huge, large scale. Again, they should have changed their name not from Facebook to Metaverse or Meta, they should have changed their name to AI because they're going to be an AI infrastructure. And I think, again, my prediction, we're going to maybe look at the tape later on, but remember I said they could be the next AWS? They could be the next AWS for AI, what AWS was for startups. But AWS is up in their game as well. Like Anthropic, and then Swami just posted about Llama, so already it's in bedrock.
Well, what about Olympus, which is coming? Right, that's what's rumored to be coming. But you know those insurance commercials with the mayhem guy.
Yeah,
comes around. He's like causes havoc. Everybody goes. That's like Meta. What they did with large language models. They came in and said, "We're going to open source our stuff. We got tons of resources." And we heard they're building what, million GPU cluster is their kind of North Star.
Yeah,
to power Meta.
Yeah.
Right. So they're at the forefront of this stuff, and they're saying, "Yeah, we're going to open source it," just like they did with OCP. They had a huge, you know, impact on the future of infrastructure. So we're seeing it again. It's awesome.
Google fired 28 workers over a sit-in protest of protesting its business ties with Israel. So that's interesting.
What'd they do? What happened?
It's on SiliconANGLE.
Google
fired 28 employees
for what?
Over sit-in protesting its business ties with Israel. 5 hours ago. Stability AI laid off 10% of its staff in the wake of CEO resignations. These are the top headlines on SiliconANGLE.com right now.
So wait, these Google employees were sitting in because Google has what, a relationship with the government of Israel?
Yeah.
Well, they're not supposed to do business with...
No, doing business in Israel, not with the government, just by the fact that they're doing business in Israel.
In Israel.
Yeah, the protest took place okay, in the previous day.
I don't
inside
understand.
Two offices what? In New York and in Sunnyvale. So it was an orchestrated, basically, sit-in. Now, remember, this week also saw the protest at the Golden Gate Bridge. And so you have people in our country just blocking it. So there's a huge issue, the Palestinians and the Israelis, the whole thing around World War III, you know, the missiles that were being fired. I mean, there's a lot of this disruption. So Google's firing people. That's interesting to see a company that had employees that once said, I won't work for a company that's doing AI. So Google was coming down hard, like rightfully so, and I applaud Google for this.
Yeah, they took over office spaces, defaced our property, and physically impeded the work of other Googlers. All right, we'll see you.
Yeah, good luck. Go to jail. Look at that. Has to this whole stuff has to stop. So I'm happy to see Google step up and not play to the crowd.
The protesters reportedly took over the building's 10th floor. New York Police Department said the sit-in involved about 50 people, four of whom were arrested for trespassing. All right. Yeah, I mean, yeah, good. good riddance. I mean, what's Google not supposed to do business in Israel? I don't understand. What's the...
That's, you know,
just because of the whole... I mean, look, what's happening to Gaza is horrible. I mean, don't get me wrong.
Yeah, but, yeah, I mean...
Okay, but what's that have to do with Google? I mean, I don't know. Maybe... I'd love to hear the other side of that story.
What's your take on Meta? I mean, this is a top story today, obviously. Meta claims both Llama Model 3s beat similar models from Gemini, Mistral, and Claude 3 on certain benchmarks. Humans marked Llama 3 higher than GPT 3.5.
Yeah, this is the common...
We are playing the benchmark game now, Dave.
Yeah, totally. This is the leapfrog, the ping pong. Right? You even heard a guy from Intel today. Hear what he said? Did you hear the nuance he said? Yeah, Gaudi 3 is 1.5 times greater than the performance than any other... You know, a large, you know, GPU that's in the market today. Talking about
that's NVIDIA's chip.
Yeah, talking about
that they've spent how many years building.
But he's talking about right. He's talking about Grace Hopper, but Gaudi 3 is not even in market yet. Okay, so everybody's playing these games, right? So whenever you hear benchmark, even when you hear Blackwell benchmarking, I should say, you got to dig in, because. You just got to question everything in the benchmarking. Ask what the workload is. You know, is it real world workload? And just look at how they're playing tricks. Of course, they're going to do that. They should do that because it is benchmarking.
Netflix reports Q1 revenue up 15% year over year, $9.3 billion versus $9.2 billion. Paid users up 16%.
So Netflix is interesting, John.
Net income up to $2.3 billion, up from $1.3 billion, $1 billion. Increase in net income.
Because you know what's happening there is there. I mean, as a Netflix user, you use Netflix. I do too. My family does. They initiated this no password sharing. Okay, so they turned the crank on that. Mm-hmm. Now their compares are getting much much tougher, but they still have another crank to turn because their password sharing crackdown was initially, I think, on just TVs. Now they're hitting your phones. Right, so they got another little lever they can pull, but then the compares get pretty tough for Netflix. So because they spend so much money on
here's
content.
Here's an interesting rumor I want to get your thoughts on. Cloud security startup Wiz is in advanced talks to acquire a competitor Lacework for $150 million to $250 million. Lacework raised
for how much?
$150 million to $200 million.
Come on, Lacework weighs $1 billion.
$1.8 billion.
Oh my gosh!
$8.3 billion.
Wow, what a
fail.
Well,
that
means they're crater. I reported on this, and you can see in the ETR data what I did is I correlated the size of the raise with the market penetration, and then normalized it by that size of the raise, and so. You could see for the amount of money that they had raised, they should be way, way outperforming the market. And then here's Wiz in that data was doing really well. So, wow, Wiz acquiring Lacework. That's
a signal.
That's a Spicer company, you know, Lacework.
Yeah, and Jay Perkiewicz alumni and Megan Eisenberg's the CMO. So I wonder if they had a go-to-market problem or a product problem. So,
well, they just raised a lot of dough. They got out over their skis. They probably tried to scale. I don't really know the story, but they probably tried to scale go-to-market before they had the right product market fit. Right? Wow, $250 million on a $2 billion raise. What happened was they raised a ton of dough when right around the Snowflake IPO, right? They were the Snowflake was really hot, right? It was very bubblicious. Spicer had the golden touch, and so they were able to raise a ton of money. Remember, we had Dave Hatfield on, and he said, "Look, we're going to approach security as a data problem."
They weren't wrong,
and they were right about
that.
They
probably got the product,
and they were right about that. But guess who else approaches security as a data problem?
Everyone else.
CrowdStrike. Palo Alto Network.
Right? I mean,
Okta. So. Zscaler. Right? It's a data problem. Those guys, too.
Well,
they have the same premise.
So it's a signal to me that, as we've been reporting on SiliconANGLE and theCUBE, that essentially the consolidation is happening.
Yeah.
The clients, customers don't want all these different vendors in there. And we're hearing it everywhere. So, to me, I'm going to dig in that story a little bit more, find out more information. On a lighter note.
At the same time, you see all these startups getting money,
On a lighter note, you're going to love this one, Dave. This is right up your alley, because you like the self-driving car stuff. DARPA, okay, the Department of Defense, reveals that an AI-controlled X-62A jet successfully faced a human pilot in an F-16 during an in-air dogfight test that carried out in 2023. So apparently, they ran an AI pilot plane against a human.
No way.
Yeah.
And it did well.
Yeah, it did well.
Wow, so here's the thing.
And they got video on, so this is a story from The Verge. So the title of the video is just, Air Force confirms first successful AI dogfight. That's a good one. That's an awesome story. So I'm fascinated by this. Dogfighting was the problem to solve so we can start testing, you know, autonomous artificial intelligence systems, says Bill Gray, the chief test pilot at the Air Force Test Pilot School. Hey, Top Gun's going to not need a pilot. Remember that whole Top Gun 2?
Yeah.
You're a relic.
So we...
drones will take over your job.
It's funny, I'm such a flip-flopper on this one because, you know, we had our little AGI bet. And I was saying, it's going to happen before
looks like
I'm
going to win that one.
It's going to happen before the end of the decade. Who knows, right?
So the bet should be, will I be alive by the end
of
the decade?
I know, right. And so I did my Twitter poll. Go to my Twitter, at DVellante, and take my poll. So right now, it's 48% or by 2030. 39% many decades, 9% say centuries, and 4% say never will we see AGI.
Those are the deniers.
But so here's what, I think it's Brian. Coming. Here's what I'm going to say. So I've kind of been a full self-driving skeptic, as you know, and some of my deep AI buddies was it last week or 2 weeks ago, one of my friends with a whiteboard session, I still got to do that. So I've kind of been a skeptic there, but I really do believe AGI is coming. So it's kind of a flip-flop by me, because if you believe AGI is coming, then it'll solve full self-driving.
So check this out. So TSMC, CEO, says the company plans to charge more for making chips outside Taiwan, citing higher costs due to a fragmented globalization environment.
Well, plus it's labor, right? So,
and their earnings just came out. So revenue's up 16% year-over-year, and then their net income up 8.9% to $6.9 billion, up from $6.6 billion.
But the stock is not doing well.
So
the stock did very poorly.
The earthquake that hit Taiwan on April 3rd caused $92.4 million in damages, and there was no power outages.
So have you ever heard Morris Chang talk about labor in Taiwan? So I'll paraphrase my takeaways. He would say things like, high-end engineers who lived, you know, miles and miles away, like hundreds of miles away, would take the bullet train into TSM, and they would live there for the week, away from their families, and just work, like 18-hour days. Okay, you're never going to get that in the United States. Okay, so that's one. The second was he would tell a story about the line workers. You know, they're skilled, but they're a lot of women doing their job, and he said in the United States, a lot of the women, they would cycle through them so fast because, you know, it was a burnout job, but they would never produce a chip that yielded, okay? And so he said in Taiwan, these workers, again, a lot of women, they'll just sit there at the telescope all day, you know, doing what they do, the basic work of building these chips, the technicians, and the yields are much, much higher.
Yeah.
And so he's saying that the culture in the United States is really not conducive to
performing
like that.
The last pod.
Yeah, and so So that's interesting that they're going to charge more.
Yeah, the U.S. is new to this. And again, we heard here Intel say in theCUBE at this event in Vegas that, you know, there's going to be real pressure to keep it in the country. And so the U.S. just awarded Samsung $6.4 billion in the CHIPS Act funding. It says the company plans to make 2-nanometer chips in its Taylor, Texas plant by 2026, 2 years ahead of TSMC. That's huge.
Yeah.
That's huge. If they pull that off, that puts America, through Samsung's team, the American manufacturing, in a position. So, you know, we could be living in an era before we die, seeing where you have to only get chips from national companies. I mean, if we have this geopolitical environment where you got World War III going on in the Middle East, okay, and then you got the whole Cold War going on, cold chip war going on with China and that whole part of the world, you might, you know, maybe the U.S. is a good call to put everything in America. So, we're going to watch this very closely because we know Intel's behind.
Well, you're not going to put EUV machines in America, so ASML missed its earnings, and the stock got crushed, and it's taking all the semiconductor stocks down. And I think basically because a lot of these fabs are holding off on buying these machines because they're trying, these machines cost hundreds and hundreds of millions of dollars. So you don't want to start buying new ones until you really need them because you got to get the machines online, so you don't want to overbuy. So that's what's taken the whole semiconductor industry down. My point is, you have choke points all across the semiconductor supply chain. You've got thin film technologies coming out of Japan. You have EUV technologies coming out of the Netherlands. You have Cadence Design Systems and other software that's critical to making chips in Silicon Valley. You've got Taiwan is the world's number one manufacturer of advanced chips. So I understand why Gina Raimondo and certainly Pat Gelsinger has been on this, and President Biden, they all want, and we want, chips to be manufactured, advanced manufacturing in the United States, but the supply chain is still very fragile. So it's good that they do that. The question that we've raised in the Cube Pod over and over and over again is, where do you place your bets? Gina Raimondo would say, okay, they're sprinkling a little to Intel, a little to Samsung, a little to TSM. The fact that TSM and Samsung are already building these advanced chips in volume at high yields says to me that they're miles ahead of Intel Foundry. And so, you know, hey, we heard today from, you know, off camera that they're optimistic. Yeah. Of the economics.
Intel's got something up their sleeve, or they don't.
Well, again,
I mean, it's either they have it or they don't.
Here's the thing. Intel's, the vast majority of Intel's volume in Foundry is Intel captive volume. The vast majority of Intel captive volume comes from PCs. IDC has PCs units growing 1.5% this year. Ergo, how does Intel conform to Wright's law, which says you got to double your cumulative volume to lower your costs. The only way they do that is to steal a lot of share from TSM and Samsung. But if TSM and Samsung have the market lead, they are such a distant third. How do they catch up and steal share to get the volume? That's their big challenge.
Meanwhile, global smartphone shipments grew 7.8% year to year at 289 million in Q1. iPhone fell 9%.
So that's all Android.
Okay.
Is growing.
Yes.
Have we seen that moment where there's finally the Android, the openness of Android is going to catch iPhone? Kind of like, remember the old Mac? Remember Mac really got in trouble because Windows just had such an open ecosystem, was so much more cost effective? But I don't know, will security play a role in that? The Android's kind of scary to me.
Well, I mean, right? I think Apple's just maybe maxed out their market. They're all the billions of people holding the iPhones. Here's a story you're going to like, Dave. Cloud data manager said Rubrik's going public, you know that.
Yeah,
and the
Bipple.
Rumor is they're selling 23 million shares between $28 and $31 each, raising $700 million plus.
We got to get
at a $5.4 billion valuation.
We got to get Bipple back on. Get his. We had him on one of the super clouds. We should get him on and talk about the IPO. Probably can't say much right now because it's been quiet period.
But. Here's a story for you. Okay, this falls off from my interview I did with the Gartner announced that Google Cloud next. Broadcom questioned by the EU over VMware licensing changes. Oh, surprise, Dave. April 15th, article in Reuters.
They're doing exactly what they said they're going to do.
Antitrust regulators about changes to newly acquired VMware license conditions. This is what they're talking about.
Did you see Hock Tan's letter?
Yeah.
It was a good letter.
It was a good letter.
It was like really cogent. I'm amazed at this guy, how well he understands these different markets.
I said from day one, I think, well, we'll see if they keep the community and the event going. They lost the end user computing group. They're spinning that one out. But they got enough meat on the bone to have VMware Explore event. And also, they have all the top customers. And so I really believe they factored into their model that who cares if people are going to not use vSphere? We don't want the freebies. It looks like they're going to kill the free version.
Yeah.
So that's going to basically hurt the vMugs of the world. And if you look at, say, their strategy, they're going to get all the top accounts, and that's part of the plan. Now, they might forecast, this is what I'm exploring in my story, did they underestimate the switching cost problem? So what's going to be very easy to tell quickly is the people that are revolting, are they one in that market basket of customers that they don't care if they move? And number two, is there an alternative? So yeah. Is that Nutanix? Is that going to be OpenStack? Is that going to be Oracle? Is that going to be
Zen.
Google? So we're going to have a lot of things to look at there.
Listen, here's my take on that. First of all, Hock Tan's letter was interesting. What my takeaway was, he said, look, we are investing. We're going to focus our R&D, and we're going to continue to add value and translation. You and I know that VMware has the best virtualization, hypervisor management on the planet. And if you want to run a private cloud that substantially runs like a public cloud, VMware has the best solution for you. So he's going to continue to invest in that and say, look, switching costs, to your point, are going to be higher than it is to pay us. Now, my advice to customers is get your best people involved and negotiate. Okay, everything's up for negotiation.
Yeah.
Have a conversation. And so so the big question I have for Broadcom is, how are they going to service all these customers? And I think the answer is, they're going to go to their top OEMs, like Dell, like HPE. We know who they are, and not to list them.
Okay, NetApp,
et cetera.
We're not going to see that. I think you're going to see
and
pay the license over. They don't want to negotiate.
Well, you got to negotiate, you got to try.
We'll see.
And see where they're at.
Stress that story.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think they will negotiate. I mean, they don't want to lose these customers. They don't want to lose the profits. And if it's profitable, and if it's highly profitable business, they'll...
Well, Hock Tan's view is, it's not making money.
No, but I think you say, look, this is how Broadcom operates. Broadcom would say, listen, if you commit to us, you know, we'll give you... good value.
Yeah,
if you commit for longer term deals, essentially, hey, if you let us lock you in, here's the deal: we will continue to invest in your roadmap, our roadmap for you, and they will. The difference between
and they just launched private AI this
people
week,
so we, were, right,
we did a
so
research
people
on that.
People used to compare Broadcom to a PE company that would just suck all the profits out and then throw away the carcass after it's done. That's not what Broadcom does. What Broadcom does is they narrow down and they focus the R&D and they continue to invest in R&D. We heard this from Charlie Kawas on the semiconductor side. It's very similar in VMware. They look for durable markets, they invest, they want to be number one in technology so that they can, quote unquote, lock you in. It is a lock-in, but the lock-in is with the best product.
So
they've got the best product, but customers are pissed. There's no question about it. Customers say, I'm paying 90% more. I've heard customers tell me their bill went up 500%. I got to dig into that and see. So what are you going to do? You're going to re-architect your entire infrastructure, which is running great? We'll see.
Dave, you're going to like this story. Remember Amazon reInvent when they rolled out the 18-wheeler truck?
Yeah.
They have snowballs.
Yeah.
It was a snowball, and then they called it
Snowmobile
was the 18-wheeler. Yeah. So here's the headline today. Amazon discontinues its snowmobile service, an 18-wheeler truck introduced in 2016 to help customers move large amounts of on-premises data to AWS facilities. It's the end of the road for the truck.
Wow. I saw...
What that tells me is, one, it was one of their big announcements that they made featured on stage. It also, too, tells me that we will start seeing the shedding of all those Amazon services that are going to be not crossing the chasm to the next generation AI version of AWS. In this one, it's pretty clear that no one's truckloading their data to the Amazon facility.
Did you see Michael Dell's tweet on this?
No.
It's not on this, but it's on repatriation. Charles Fitzy will love this. Michael Dell, he said, multi-cloud, including on-prem and co-location, is the clear trend, somewhat driven by the growth in AI inference and data gravity. 83% of enterprise CIOs in Barclays survey plan to repatriate at least some workloads in 2024, up from the low point of 43% in 2020, H2. Hashtag PowerFlex. He's always selling products, I love it. And so, this shows, look at this, it shows dramatic. This is the light blue here, sorry you can't see this, is planning some kind of repatriation in the first half of 24. 83 respondents out of 100. Wow, that's a lot. But who knows what that means. Right? It could be they did a test dev in the cloud, and now they're moving it on-prem. Oh, yeah, we're repatriating. So, you know, who knows what that really is. It's, you certainly don't see repatriation in the revenue numbers, right? I mean, the cloud continues to grow at, you know, solid double digits, right? 20-plus percent. And on-prem's growing, you know, mid-single digits.
Interesting story. I thought you'd get a kick out of that.
Yeah, thanks for...
Well,
spinning me up. How about Kara today? Saying, sounded like Lena Khan up there about the AT&T breakup. Did you hear that?
Yeah, Kara was very woke up there and very, very much.
She was good.
She was good, but she was definitely not holding back any punches because.
When did she ever?
my favorite line of the day was, not that I want to see my fellow tech leaders get skewered, but she's right. There's no real accountability around their performance. And she used the example of the Alaska Airlines door that flew off everyone's
nose. Explain that. Explain what her issue was.
Her issue is that they're not accountable. So she used the Alaska Airlines. The door came off, everyone saw it, and there was even a spoof the iPhone survived. And so everyone's like, oh my God, the door blew up. I could die. It's an airplane, people are on it, and people could get killed.
Yeah, that was
airplane
pretty
safety hairy. Is pretty important. We all fly around, so we know. We hope that it's strict. So
this is where you want regulators paying attention.
So everyone went batshit crazy. The CEO gets fired, okay, over a door exploding. And no one got hurt, but it could, oh my God, they're terrible. They're doing their safety check.
Right.
Someone fucked up. Okay, even if the plane did crash, which it did, thank God, it's still a tragedy. But just the possibility that they don't have their act together, the guy gets fired, the CEO. Her point was Mark Zuckerberg, Sundar Pichai, all these people run these companies that are, some would say, is irresponsible. Facebook certainly has done things that everyone now knows to make a profit, and there were consequences that are far worse than a plane crashing. How many people have died because of overlooking some of the things on Facebook? Lawlessness of the activities on the network, the lack of oversight, things they didn't do. They chose profit over actually making a better platform safe. And that's why shows like this at SaaS, trust and safety, is causing all kinds of backlash. So what Swish is saying is there's no even laws to cover these guys.
They're
behind the FCC Act in 1996 that said, hey, you know, your section, what is it, 300, whatever?
Section 203.
203, yeah. It's like, yeah, it's your platform. And so what she's saying is the tech industry, it has no one, like there's no accountability there. The other thing she's saying is, and this is, I think, the tech bro pile on, but, and you know, I kind of feel the same way as her. There's a lot of bros out there, but and they think they're entitled. I think there's some entitlement that, and we've talked to some of them on the pod many times, and on theCUBE. There was an era of entitlement that I'm a tech bro, look at me, and I can do anything. And so she's saying, X number of people, a homogeneous group of people, are making software that's designed for the whole world. So that's really not representative to what needs to happen. So that's a legitimate point too. But, you know, and her point is that AI needs data. So Swisher's been doing her homework. So through her podcast, through her work she's doing, she's plugged in at the epicenter of all the action. And so I thought she did a great job. One, being the flair for the dramatic, because she's always great. you know, on that. And I thought she was really well informed. You know, she is over the top on certain issues, you know, and I respect that, actually. I've always liked Kara Swisher. I never really, I mean, people take issue with Kara Swisher. I've always liked her, so.
She's quality.
She knows reporter. The score. And when she goes after somebody, it's either because they pissed her off or they're a bad person. And she's like that. She's like, she will basically grind hard on someone if they're a total jerk.
Yes.
And sometimes it might be personal, too, like her and Elon Musk. Are going at it huge.
So her point, I think, was we have to have a national privacy policy, right? She was very strong on that. And then, but she followed that up with, she triggered me. She said something to the effect of, if we didn't break up AT&T, we'd be carrying around a brick for a phone. And that was deregulation. That's
just a dog whistle
But so I said, it was not, hey, that's okay, but it wasn't all good. The baby bells, they dragged their feet on broadband. Remember, and then they merged with each other and with cable companies, so they got bigger and stupider. And Bell Labs, a gem of United States R&D, is no longer in the United States. It's owned by Nokia, so we kind of lost that. And my point is that history...
AT&T, though, was a behemoth that needed to be
broken
up.
Yes, okay. I'm not saying they shouldn't have broken it up, but I'm just saying that to say... Lena Khan does this, too. See, it was all good. It wasn't all good. It created a bunch of baby bells that
by the way, it was really bad because those baby bells... killed the last mile opportunity during the dot-com.
And they did. That's what I meant. They were really slow to do broadband. What did they do? DSL was their answer.
They created process that they knew was going to increase the truck roll costs for these they open up the providers to get access to their central office.
So
and then what happened was it was dead. The war was over before.
I would argue the following that it was.
I know that market really well.
Okay, so good. So then help me sort of make my case here because I would say it was the deregulation that allowed guys like MCI and Sprint to compete. And that created competition and lowered prices. It wasn't so much the breakup of AT&T as it was the ability of these other carriers to run on their networks and to charge less and create competition. And so my point is that market forces always see, in tech anyway, have had better outcomes than government intervention. The IBM for years was locked up by the DOJ, Microsoft. Nothing really ever came out of it. And then market forces. In the case of Microsoft, it was Linux and the LAMP stack. You know, in the case of IBM, it was the Wintel.
I know, but the market
factor.
Forces are different now, Dave. So I'll give you an example.
So no, this is a really good point.
On the AT&T thing, I was to say this.
Good.
Their hope for competition never happened.
Right, never happened.
So
it helped the Europeans become more competitive.
Well. I'm not sure how the Europeans competed in New Jersey, but...
You go to MWC, these European telcos...
Yeah, but I'm talking about the U.S. here, because I'm talking about AT&T, not the international market. License spectrum is a whole other story to get into, but...
But go ahead.
Spectrum map. So, but that failed. What Swisher's getting at is that when you're trying to conflate, you know, other things, it's a little bit different scope, the size and scope of that. I would say AT&T is probably compared to what's happening now, basically your market forces, is that what we talked with Ray Wang on our analyst panel this morning is that right now the market's getting smaller and with a smaller number of big players.
Yep.
Okay, so customers don't have choice. So that is more concerning for me than the size of Apple, right? Or so that's going to be interesting. So if what's happening with the market forces now is people consolidating. So, you know, there it is.
But I guess if I'm Andy Jassy, I'm saying we got a lot of competition. We compete with Microsoft. We compete with Google.
I've never bought the argument that Amazon's a monopoly. Okay, yet I think they have competition where Amazon has an advantage, and how do I say this politely? They control the results. So, we give access to everybody. Come on, the top search results, and it's there. Everyone knows that statistically, everyone clicks on the top results. Okay,
talking about searching Amazon.com.
Yeah, their search advertising is off the roof. So when you own the first,
it's funny because I never do, because of that factor. I scroll down, but most people do. You know, it drives most of the traffic.
Most people that are smart look at other things like, ratings, rankings.
Right, of course.
You know, because there's a lot
and then you try to parse out which ratings
are
fake.
There's a lot of fake shit on there, and there's a lot of bad quality.
Right,
best price doesn't always matter. And Amazon doesn't always have the best selection. So when I was buying my new golf clubs, okay, I was like, oh, wow. I want to buy. They only had one selection. The selection was weak.
Amazon.
They're not known for selling golf clubs, but they sell.
Amazon
they
Choice.
Do, they do sell Callaway, but they sell the brand that I don't want.
Yeah.
Only one brand. So I go to. I had more choice on eBay.
Oh, eBay's great.
Than Amazon.
I love eBay.
Golf clubs.
Right?
So.
Because there's not eBay branded products, right?
Yeah.
So, so eBay, I mean, I love eBay. But so I won't buy certain things on Amazon, right? If I know something's going to be some poorly made product that's coming from China, I won't buy it. Like, do you ever buy Amazon batteries? They are the worst frickin' batteries on the planet. They're so bad, but they're cheap. You know, they sell a lot of them. So, what else is going on?
I don't know, Dave. I mean, I think the AI thing, and I think that comes with Ray Wang, got my attention. People are getting laid off, and there's no jobs for them, right? So you're going to start to see AI start doing things in non-core areas. I thought Ray said something interesting. You and he had a good exchange. If you're not in sales or engineering or some core function, those other departments won't be fully funded. They'll be co-piloted.
Yeah.
So what you're going to start to see is known workflows that are business-oriented or manufacturing-oriented that run things of an apparatus of a system. They're going to be looked at as where the people labor component is. So I think you're going to start to see concentrations of distributed, a distribution of people, of concentration of IP, people IP, labor IP, in the areas that add the most value. Sales, go-to-market, engineering, quality, if you're in a creative job, it's creativity. But support functions, finance, HR, other stuff will be augmented with AI. Yeah, they'll still be humans, but, you know, what are you talking about there?
Well, so that was an interesting exchange, and my premise was you're not seeing the top line being driven by AI. I mean, other than NVIDIA, obviously, and Broadcom, their top line is being driven by AI. I would say Google with search and Meta with advertising, with Facebook, to the extent they can build better AI, they're going to generate more ads. But most enterprises aren't seeing top-line revenue with AI. What they are potentially seeing, you saw this with RPA, is they're able to do more automation. And except, you know, a lot of the RPA, I don't think RPA had the impact that AI is going to have. I mean, RPA wasn't like, hey, we're going to reduce a bunch of jobs. RPA was, we maybe can avoid hiring more people and throwing more labor at the problem. So that's kind of what RPA did. What AI is doing is allowing people to kind of giving them excuse to cut. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
They're saying, hey, we're bloated. You know, let's spin this as automation. and it'll drop right to the bottom line.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I don't know how much of that is just, hey, we're getting rid of the bottom 10% because, you know, we need to save money, versus them spinning a story to Wall Street of, hey, we got this great automation story now with we're such strong AI practitioners, we're applying it, and it's dropping right to the bottom line, so buy our stock. So we'll see how that all plays out. I think a lot of that is just smart packaging by the IR departments.
Well, I think you're going to see a lot. My final takeaway is multimodal models are going to be key on the AI front. Having all the models in one spot is going to be key, because then that way you can control the governance. I think you're going to see AI generate a new entrepreneurial equation, and entrepreneurship is going to be also inside companies, intrapreneurship inside a company. So external entrepreneurship founders and founders teams will be smaller. I think that's clear. And then inside a company, or even the big companies, if you can innovate with one feature with AI and make it happen, you can transform a business. That means anyone in the company doesn't have to send a memo, I have an idea, fund me. They can actually explore with things like via Workbench and get in there and actually add value. Say, I made a discovery, and then show people the proof.
Yeah.
That means the intellectual property of the next generation of of this society is going to be workflows and data. And that can be applied to society and to personal lives, to business. And so I think you're going to start to see people start thinking like a systems architect. And we heard people say, you got to look at everything first. Yes, that's called a system.
Yeah.
You call it the value chain. I call it a bunch of components that work together that are understood and organized in a way to make something happen at runtime. Hey, compile, run, execute, command. So I think we're going to get to a very much a computer science vibe in society. And that's good for us because we love tech, deep tech, and theCUBE is tech TV. So it's going to be great for us. It's going to be a tailwind for us to spin DJ on all the content. So I love it. I'm drunk on AI. You know, I'm always drinking the AI Kool-Aid. So, you know, the whole trust thing, love the message at SaaS. I don't like how people are overplaying the trust factor and creating a problem where there isn't one yet. And I think there's a little bit of a warning sign. I get that, but I don't think we should be implementing policies. Let's let things run for a little bit. Let the chaos reign, and then reign in the chaos. That is the prescription. And I love the Equal AI founder. I like Reggie Townsend's vision. Let's be transparent, but let's not overplay it, and let's not let this stuff get hijacked by social justice warriors. And social justice warriors are going to transform what is an open, transparent process to taking it over. And that's, I've seen that happen before. You got good intentions, but you need to have quality people dedicated to it. Otherwise, it gets hijacked. I've seen that in open source committees, and the best open source projects and committees are great. So I'll end it on that note. As far as I'm concerned, that's my take. You know, as we start rolling out the insights from these events, end-to-end workflows, faster, smarter AI, and you're going to start to see the intellectual property shift from the tech programmer, yeah, look at me, I'm the founder, to, no, technology is everywhere, the glue between all the elements, the new power player, the new fandom to idolize is the value creators. Simply put, Dave, if you create value, you will be the new worshipped person in your organization, on the press. It's not, I am a nerd, I built the most amazing machine learning algorithm, therefore worship me. So I think the value creators will become the new superpower person that people will look to and say, that made a difference. You get the awards, you get the promotion, you make the money, you get the press clippings. Creating value in an open, transparent way that moves the needle will be easier and faster to do, which means new brands are going to emerge, new talent's going to emerge, and the proof is going to be in, as you said, what's the scoreboard say? What did that value create? Because value has metrics to value. More revenue, lower costs, happier people, more productive, more trustful. So I think you start getting into the world where, show me.
So, exactly.
Show me the steak.
One of my 2024 predictions was, 2024 will be the year of AI ROI or else. And I basically said, I don't think it's going to happen. And if it doesn't happen, meaning it'll throw off enough cash to do gain sharing, and if it doesn't happen, then people are going to start tightening up, to your point about value. But I wanted to actually tell a quick story as we close. I don't know if we have time.
We got time.
I think we got time. Rafe Meyerson said, he listens to the podcast, and he LinkedIn me or texted me and said, hey, love the podcast. Love to learn more about like your business, how you guys started, and you know, a little inside baseball on theCUBE. So I wanted to share with people, like, we don't have much time. We'll give them the short version. You and I met in 2010.
Let's do that next podcast.
Right? You and I met, I'll just give the short, the bumper sticker. You and I met in 2010, and we hit it off, and then you shared with me later on the idea of theCUBE, and we were the first, obviously, to do live TV programming at shows, and so I'd love to at some point explore that story and share with people. You know how you called me when I was in Dallas and we're doing Hadoop World, get to New York. I flew to New York in an ice storm.
We'll dedicate an hour and we'll script up a nice
detailed. Well, here's the thing. Let us know if you want that, because I don't know. I mean, we've told that story and a lot of our insider friends know it. But if that's something you'd be interested in, let us know.
Yeah. Good. All right, on that note, a little bit of a lower energy pod this week. We're burnt out. Multiple CUBE gigs here in Vegas. Great stuff. We love what we do. We love the pod. We love talking to the experts, leaders. We're going to continue to do that in theCUBE. Guys, thanks for listening. Appreciate it. Love what we do. Thanks for listening to episode 55. See you next time.